Hey, I just want to say, as we begin this grand adventure, you're welcome in advance.
You're listening to the Backseat Sports Podcast with Zach Diodati and James Troiano.
Let's be honest, the bar is not real high right now.
Right.
Hey, that's quite a voice you've got there. You ever think about doing radio?
It sounds really cool.
No, it's not cool.
Can you bring a picture up?
Are you kidding me?
All foreigners love Chicago teams.
We do not have time for this kind of silliness.
A lot of booze, parties, women showing you the goods for beads. It doesn't get any better than that.
Smooth. Very, very smooth stuff. Very classy. I'm learning a lot from you right now, dude.
When I heard about this, I wanted to come up with some kind of articulate and thoughtful and, you know, well-debated response. This is just stupid.
Email us at backseatsports@gmail.com or hit us on Twitter at backseatzach or at backseatjack.
You are back in the backseat, the Backseat Sports Podcast. I'm Zach Diodati alongside James Troiano and Adam Tully, and you're in for it again. And well, it's kind of hard to avoid the biggest story in sports of the week. And just when you thought you'd heard the worst in the Penn State Jerry Sandusky child abuse scandal that broke last fall in November of 2011, Louis Free, a FBI investigator, comes to the conclusion after a lengthy investigation that the highest ranking members at Penn State University, including head coach Joe Paterno and the university president, covered for Sandusky all these years that he was committing these crimes against children, both while employed and after being employed as a defensive coordinator of the Nittany Lions. So, of course, that brings us to the big question, and one that the NCAA Disciplinary Committee is probably going to weigh for a while. Should Penn State receive the so-called death penalty, which has only been issued once in NCAA football history against SMU for various violations in the late 80s that canceled their entire 87 football season, SMU, and they had an abbreviated 88 season. Now, of course, when that happens to your program, it's very, very difficult to recover. It takes a long time because no one wants to come and play for you. Of course, you don't have a football schedule, and so it's a big-time punishment. So, James,
yeah,
should Penn State receive the death penalty?
No, absolutely not.
And why not?
I thought you'd never ask. No, because I don't think that the NCAA has jurisdiction in this matter. This is a matter that is rightly so being taken to justice in criminal court, and it will be taken to justice in civil court when these people begin to sue the various, Penn State itself, and then various individuals who worked in and around Penn State while this was going on. I don't think that there is any... This is not something directly related to sports or players on the field. This is a criminal act that occurred by a criminal on the grounds of Penn State, and I think that there are consequences that need to occur there. But I don't think the NCAA has jurisdiction over this particular matter.
I think I can see where you're coming from, because let's just compare it to SMU, you know, because we kind of have to. I mean, it's the only other death penalty case. According to all the investigations that have taken place at Penn State, there were no players involved here. And
right.
So, you know, your athletic program really revolves around the players. So I think at least where you're coming from is that this had everything to do with the executive, so to speak, in the football world at Penn State, and it had nothing to do with actual football competition. Now, that might be fair to say, because when SMU received the death penalty, this was all about making players want to come to SMU in illegal ways, and it had everything to do with the players and had everything to do with gaining an unfair advantage when game time actually came. So
the issue directly there was that was something completely different, because in this case, that was the whole repeat offender rule that applied, which is why they got the death.
Because they had been warned.
Had been warned, and this circumstance would be obviously though it occurred over many years, this would be kind of a one time. This thing is so egregious that we feel like we have to give this. It wouldn't surprise me if the NCAA did something although I'm not sure exactly what they could do where people would say that, oh, okay, they did that. That is that penalty kind of fits the crime, because the crime is so just absolutely
heinous. There's nothing that you
that
can do.
I don't think that the NCAA, whether they want to or not,
they don't have the weapons,
should even become involved in this, because people are going to go to jail, whether it be obviously Jerry Sandusky for actually performing the rape, or Jeff Schultz and Curley, the athletic director and president, for purging themselves.
Yeah.
I think that is where I think that Penn State is going to have enough trouble recruiting kids to come to this school in the first place now that that will take care of itself. The image is so tarnished that the NCAA doesn't need to get involved here, because I think that it's muddy water, and the NCAA itself doesn't exactly have a great reputation of handing out
fixing things.
Yeah, exactly. Well, fixing them or handing out punishments that people think are fair for other things. I think that this is something where that the NCAA can't win by handing out a punishment. I think if they go to what some might consider too lenient, they're going to get criticized. If they give the death penalty, I think people would criticize that, because a lot of people think that they shouldn't get involved. So I don't think I think it's a no-win situation for the NCAA. Let's let it get taken care of in court.
The only thing we can compare this to right now is the SMU from the 80s. But if you really look at it, it's kind of nothing like it, because you look at the fact that the crimes that were committed with SMU, they were football players doing things with the football games.
Yeah.
Whereas you look at Penn State, it had nothing to do with the players, like you've already said, and there were crimes that had nothing to do with football.
At Penn State.
Right.
Yeah. And look.
So it's hardly, what do you...
Here's the problem, though, because the NCAA right now, they have this reputation right now, not necessarily reputation, but look, the programs in their jurisdiction have gotten away from them. Just in the past, look, a year ago, we thought the Ohio State issue was bad. And a lot of people right now might be thinking, wait, what, Ohio State? Exactly. They had some players that got paid for some game-worn. No, they got paid for some game-worn material that they sold themselves. You can't do that. They got some free tattoos in exchange for some other. I mean, this is honestly, that's some really, really minor vanilla stuff compared to what happened at Miami.
Yeah.
The news we got about Miami over the summer. And then last fall, the news we got about, and even then, and it kept escalating. You thought Miami was as bad as it could get. And then obviously Penn State is really as bad as it can get.
Yeah, but the issue is that the NCAA, they haven't even done anything to Miami yet. It's really strange. And they need, this is a separate conversation for a separate time, but they need more specific guidelines about what they're punishing, because I don't think that we should ever be having a conversation wondering whether or not the NCAA should get involved, because their rules should be so clearly defined that you know what will possibly happen if you take these actions. And I think if they did create some kind of specific set of rules that people could turn to and go to in situations like this,
it might be hundreds of pages.
But this would not be in the jurisdiction that they would potentially write out for themselves.
No, it wouldn't.
I don't think they envisioned this as something that they would be governing over when they are thinking of things that they could possibly punish teams for.
Your input on whether or not Penn State should get the death penalty has a lot of nuances in it for someone who hasn't exactly been paying close attention to this, or pays close attention to college football. And so that brings me to the fact that I think the NCAA almost, it's as close to having no choice but to give them the death penalty as you can, because if they don't, a lot of people are going to ask, and again, they may not be thinking about the nuances that you mentioned, about the fact that this doesn't have to do with players and it's not about football and it's not in their jurisdiction. But a lot of people are going to ask, if this doesn't get you the death penalty, what does?
Well, it's like, okay, you say the NCAA shouldn't get involved, but I mean, they can't just sit there.
Think about it. This could have occurred anywhere on the university. And if you're saying that just because the coach was a football player and Joe Paterno made a poor choice by deciding that he wouldn't, he decided that he would consult, he would advise them to take care of this in-house. This is a criminal matter that does not have anything relate, nothing, this has nothing to do with anything that happened on the football field.
Right. I mean, that's what, that's
the NCAA governs matters pertaining to the competitiveness of college athletics. This does not have anything to do with the competitiveness of college athletics. This has to do with a sick man who other men who were misguided decided to allow him to do this for a span of 14 years. But the players didn't let him do this.
You're right about the fact that it has nothing to do with football competition. It doesn't.
But so where does the NCAA draw a line? What are they going to start governing then at this point? If a water boy rapes somebody in the bleachers after a game in the offseason, do they govern that?
NCAA can't really do anything about the actual rape itself, but the fact that people at Penn State knew about it and didn't do anything about it, that's where the NCAA.
No one started talking about the death penalty until this week when they found out that members of the university and the head coach were covering for him. Now, that's the thing is, there never would have been a death penalty conversation if it was just Sandusky and there was reason to deny that these other figures. They knew about this or that they were covering it up. Mm-hmm. So the death penalty conversation only started taking place when you find out that the university president was covering for him.
I
understand what you're saying. This has nothing to do with football competition at all. Of course, it didn't give them any edge on the field. It has nothing to do with sports or the athletic competition. But perception's reality, and the NCAA might make a decision based on just perception. Just their reputation. Right.
Yeah, but that's not their job is not to do that. Their job is to look at the facts and make an appropriate ruling and penalty based on the facts.
All right.
If you're the NCAA and you cannot find it in yourself to create a defining penalty for what took place in Miami when you know exactly what happened out of the guy. Straight from the horse's mouth, basically.
Right.
The guy's in jail telling you word for word what he has done and the improprieties that he has caused directly relating to players on the field. I don't know how if you're the NCAA, you can seep through this muddy water of what is your jurisdiction and what isn't and what might have, how this might affect things on the field and how it might not, and then come up with an accurate ruling that is appropriate for the rape of the multiple times rape of many children over a span of 14 years. Yeah. I don't think that's in their I'm just having trouble figuring out how they are able to rule on that. I feel like I'm trying to come up with an analogy, and I feel like it would be like if Roger Goodell penalized the team for draft picks because an assistant coach murdered somebody.
I understand.
Okay, you're right. That'd be clear cut and dry. But if the team knew about the murders and covered for him, then yes,
Goodell still wouldn't do anything.
No,
but he would have the authority.
Yeah, why? What would he do? Take away draft picks for that? It doesn't make any sense.
I understand what you're saying. It has nothing to do.
No, those people. Hold on.
It's not clear cut and dry though.
Why would Goodell do anything? Because those people that committed those acts would go to. They would be tried in criminal court. For this, and Roger Goodell
Look,
at that point.
Okay, but the best that what he'd probably do is he'd ban them from the league, but he wouldn't do anything. What he'd do, it wouldn't do anything to the team.
Maybe the players, but not the team would not lose draft picks for their players committing crimes. Plaxico Barris shoots himself at a club, he doesn't. They don't go to the Giants and go, "You guys got to lose a draft pick."
Well, again, because nobody covered for him.
I agree,
it would be completely unfair to the players and the rest of Penn State if the whole team was penalized.
I can tell you exactly what the NFL would do because they have Roger Goodell and the NFL have laid out
Is there a rape rule in the NFL?
They've laid out a clear set of circumstances for what they will and will not punish. If you videotape the other team practicing, Spygate, you will lose draft picks. Okay, if your player shoots himself in the leg, you don't lose draft picks. Your player gets suspended.
Yeah.
Adam Pac-Man Jones, go make it rain at a nightclub where they're shooting. So you're getting suspended from the field. Okay.
All right.
But your team is not getting penalized unless your team commits an impropriety relating to the competitiveness of something on the field. Look at the Saints.
Are you way more likely to support the concept of the death penalty for Miami? Because that has everything
because it's not. I think in order to warrant the death penalty, you need to do something multiple times. Be punished for it, and then do the same thing again. I don't think you're learning your lesson, and I think at that point you may need the death penalty.
All right, that's an interesting theory.
Straight up death penalty, that's a little harsh.
Let's go to something that has nothing to do with the NCAA's jurisdiction, but just the reaction and the way that the Penn State's going to handle it as a community. Do they need to take down the Paterno statue?
I think that it needs to possibly eventually come down. However, I'm all for taking a deep breath, spending some time thinking about whether you actually want to take this down, what this will mean to the university, to the fans, to the people coming into your stadium, because here's why. You take it down, you can't put it back up. Okay?
Yes.
If you leave it up, you've left it up, you've taken it down. You cannot take the statue down, put it in the closet, put it in the woodshed, yeah, and then be like,
wait
okay,
till things settle.
It's been 5 years. I think people are over. Let's put it back up.
Here's why I think they need to take it down. Because it's going to be bad for them if they don't. And I don't know if you heard the comments Bobby Bowden made just this past week about that statue being up. He said every time there's a Penn State game and it's televised and they begin the broadcast, that camera's going to be on that Joe Paterno statue. It's the responsibility of the vulture media, sports broadcaster, not to get that ugly, awkward moment on TV. And he's right. Every time that there is a Penn State football broadcast, they're going to show that statue, and it's going to be bad. And look, James, if you are the Penn State AD, do you want every sport, do you want the other coaches in the Big Ten and in the region to have the upper hand to go into recruits' homes and be like, you know, look, you don't want your kid to go into that culture over there. They left that statue up. I mean, that's don't think the coaches won't say things like that on the recruiting trail.
That's a little lowbrow.
You need to pay attention to college recruiting if you think that's lowbrow.
I don't think it's ugly.
Recruiting's ugly.
If they take down, it won't be for that reason. It will be because they feel a moral obligation to the victims' families and the victims themselves that they don't think it's appropriate to have the statue of a guy who... here's my whole thing with this.
Of course it's a moral thing, but...
I think Joe Paterno, if the email... We have to assume that the email, when he said after, you know, I think it was Curly, one of them said, after consulting with Joe, we've decided to keep this in-house, when he was talking to Spanier, or might have been Spanier, when he was if that's true, and I think we all believe that that's true, that happened, that Joe had that conversation, and they decided to not punish this in-house, I think Joe is as much to blame as anybody else, and he would be also criminally culpable for these actions. And as such, you cannot leave the statue of a criminal in front of your stadium.
That would be an accomplice.
You can't leave the statue of a criminal up in front of your stadium. That is as unbecoming as, I don't know who would want to leave that statue up. I'm not sure. I think it will eventually come down because people are going to think about these points and state them, and it's going to come down, but I don't think it needs to come down tomorrow because we're all up. Like, I don't think it needs to be people out there with pitchforks and torches it down. I think that they need
everyone should take a breath. Yeah. Luckily for Penn State, they can take a breath because it's the summer. You know, what if the free report came out during football season? Yeah. You would have no choice then but to have a knee-jerk reaction and take it down like on a Wednesday before your next game. So right now, they do have the luxury of waiting a couple weeks because football season doesn't start for another month and a half.
Think you should replace. I think that they should take it down. And if they take it down, I think that they should replace it with, I would advise them, if I was a consultant, to replace it with something that Penn State's heritage could be proud of, such as.
Look, they can put up a lion,
A lion I'm sure that they have plenty. Maybe. I don't know, maybe replace it if they have another statue of a great linebacker that played there or something else that you can be proud of when you walk in. So if the cameras are on that, ESPN is then talking about there's the statue of blah, blah, blah.
And look, you said it's a moral thing to take it down. I agree, but let's be honest. This is a business, and this is about how you present yourself. And the pressure, and it sounds bad, the pressure isn't going to come from the moral aspect. The pressure is going to come when you leave, like you said, the statue. Do you realize how different this would be if Joe Paterno was still alive?
Well,
whoa! I mean, he would be facing criminal charges.
You're absolutely right. He'd be facing criminal charges. But here, the good thing that if you are a Penn State fan or a member of the football team that you can bring with you moving forward is that once they take that statue down, they're renaming. I know that Nike is renaming some of their Joe Paterno titled facilities there and some other things. They're gonna get rid of all that. And the bottom line is that this is I think that Penn State we will eventually look back on this as a nightmarish chapter in a long storied history of a university, and they will get past this once you remove Joe Paterno and the old staff and everybody who was affiliated with this or anything like this from the university. The university is still the university. These are new players. These players had nothing to do with anything that went on in the late 80s, early 90s, up until, well, late 90s into the early 2000s, I should say. And I think that this is not something that defines. I think that people right now that are either rivals of Penn State because they're from another university or they just don't like what went on. I don't think that this, you can use this scenario to define the university as a whole. I think that this was a series of obviously a heinous criminal, but also a series of terrible, terrible decisions by misguided individuals. And I think that part of putting this in the past for Penn State will be to remove the statue, anything that with Joe Paterno's name on it, any records, any you know how they name streets after these guys and everything. Yeah. Just get rid of all that stuff.
Yeah. No, they're going to have to. You're right. And it's all about perception at this point going forward and in the way that you change. You bury that, not necessarily bury, because you don't want to pretend it didn't happen. I mean, you have to take responsibility for it, but it's about perception. It's about maintaining a decent image. And I think we all agree.
Let me pose a question back to you. We've seen stories of redemption from the something like a Michael Vick.
Yeah.
Or, well, let's just use Michael Vick for an example, because he's the most recent somebody that fell
on a major scale.
It was about as far as an individual can fall in the media spotlight. And do you think that if Penn State recommits itself to child safety, just, I don't know if they want to go down the road specifically of, you know, starting to take on a charity that might mirror Second Mile as far as donating to, but do you think if they recommit themselves to preventing just heinous crimes, do you think that this could be something where that America as a whole, if they see the university turn a corner, that this will be something that they will be able to say is something that Penn State has turned the page. This is an old chapter, kind of like Michael Vick. Now, no one really talks about the Michael Vick that was. It's almost like it's a different person. It's strange, people, but it's almost like it's a different person.
People feel good about themselves when they can forgive a public figure that really didn't even do anything to them, because it makes them feel better than that person, and that can even go for an organization. So if it gets to the point where people can say, okay, Penn State, you know, you did good and you fixed that, and people like to do that. So I think that it is possible.
So I guess my question was, you don't think that this will be something where for decades, you know, years, decades, that people will identify this with Penn State as kind of that's Penn State. This happened. Do you think that in this case the university is bigger than the action, or this action was so big that it is going to identify the university?
I don't think it's going to identify them, but listen, I hate to use this analogy because it's very different. But look, you know how you hear everyone say when they're very rare, but when a plane crash happens, they say that the safest airline to fly after that is the one that just had the crash,
right?
Because they are stressedly trying to make sure they do everything perfectly.
Right.
I think similarly, Penn State will be, I mean, they're going to be the most community-oriented university for a while now, because of this. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
That
plus, kind of plus you have to again remember it was kind of like a one bad apple kind of thing, you know. So when you actually see yeah. Penn State on TV and you're watching the players play football mm-hmm. or whatever it is, it's basketball, mainly with football. It wasn't those guys.
Yeah.
It was one bad apple. I don't think, you know, 5-10 years down the road, people I don't think will forget necessarily, but I don't think it'll be yeah. like, you know, as big as a deal, you know.
Well, we can only hope it's an isolated incident and that this isn't the kind of thing that, you know, we can only hope that we don't hear more stories like this. We got a little bit of mail that we're going to cover. Some listeners that have sent us some questions. Coming up next on the Backseat Sports Podcast.
You're listening to the Backseat Sports Podcast with Zach Diodati and James Troiano. Email us at backseatsports@gmail.com or hit us on Twitter at backseatzach or at backseatj.
Ah, that is on Twitter at backseatzach and at James Troiano. James Troiano. We're going to look at some mail right now. You can write on our Facebook wall. That's the Backseat Sports Show on Facebook. You can hit us on Twitter. You can email us, backseatsports@gmail.com. Our good friend Mike wrote on our Facebook wall and asked us, "Hey, I like the new BCS format. Four is good because it strikes the balance between maintaining the importance of the regular season, but at the same time not having a situation like 2004, where an undefeated team from a major conference doesn't get a shot. One thing I was wondering, though, was how do you think or support the concept of the idea of mega conferences forming to meet this new format? I've heard the idea that the powers that would be would merge and make four giant conferences and have a conference championship for each, with the winner getting an automatic bid. What are your thoughts on that? James, would that make the situation any better for you? Because there's a much better argument there that this could be decided on the field."
Yeah.
It would make I
agree. No, I would yeah, like
no,
that.
That
I would all like
right,
that.
And here's why. Because this more resembles a professional sports setup where yeah. you have to play your way to the championship, which yeah. is what we all want, mm-hmm. rather than four old men sitting in a room deciding
more than four,
if you should.
Right.
Because
I remember last week, you and I were on the 18 right. bandwagon.
Yeah,
that's what we were on.
I'm still on the 18 bandwagon, so I like this a lot better. But look, if they do this,
this
is the system correcting itself. This is not the stupid BCS in their crappy ways.
Well, here's the argument that inevitably would come in again.
Do you agree with me?
You can only fit so many teams in four conferences. There's 120 something schools in Division I football. So, you know, those schools that didn't get invited mm-hmm. to those four mega conferences would be like, I mean, hey guys, come on. I don't, you know.
Well,
look, there'd be like, right, yeah, that.
Yeah, but
hold on. If you make up the four mega conferences of every BCS conference now, add a couple teams that might be on the fringe, you're good.
There's still going to be teams that were in Division One.
Yeah, I'm going to throw a grenade in this conversation.
Like,
hold
who?
On, you ready?
Like,
well, you have relegation and promotion.
All right.
Yeah, look, here's right. the thing about that.
Right.
That would be...
in
all seriousness, Sully, the thing that would be really difficult about that is that in college football, they make their schedules like years out.
Right.
Like right now, there
Why?
Are... Because the two
Don't.
Schools, because the two schools are like two schools together. They want to play a home yeah. and home. They're responsible, like on their own, for like signing the deal, mm-hmm. and then they just get approval from the NCAA. You know how we have this game in Atlanta every Labor Day weekend, start of football season, the Chick-fil-A kickoff classic.
Yeah,
those schools basically just get with that Chick-fil-A committee, mm-hmm. and they just agree to play each other, and then the NCAA says, "Yeah, sure, that's fine."
Yeah,
so. That's done a few years in advance so that you know that you're going to play that game. That's, I understand what you're saying. Okay, just don't do that. But, I mean, Michigan and Alabama signed a deal recently to play like home and home in 2017, 2018. I mean, we're talking way in advance. Some of these games get scheduled. Right.
Relegation's not realistic. But anyway, what team? All right. What teams do you think would not be in this?
The Nevadas of the world.
Nevada doesn't deserve to be playing for a national championship.
All right, but just last week...
Nevada is not Boise State. Nevada is not TCU.
But Nevada for
Nevada
many years has played...
Nevada is closer to Wyoming
than
they are to Boise State.
All right, hold on. For many years, Nevada played in the same conference as TCU and Boise State, and they beat both of those guys a time or two. So how far are we away from Nevada just rolling an undefeated season off in that week?
Here's how far. When they start scheduling... teams that are in the top 10 and beating them, then we can talk about having them enter one of the four conferences. But until then, no.
Well, look, the NCAA can't just tell Nevada, hey, tough luck, you're not good. I mean, Nevada's not going to see it that way.
Everybody who wants to be in these four conferences step forward while they're in Nevada.
Look, there were legislators from Utah that were seriously threatening to bring a lawsuit against the BCS because they left out, you know, Utah wasn't part of the power conferences.
Make it six conferences.
All okay, right, first but of all, make that's, it do you know math?
Yeah,
like,
no,
you can't
well,
make it.
It has to make it eight.
Well, okay.
He's got that smile on his face like, all right, let me back up here.
No, well, can I finish the rest of my sentence? You were like waiting to jump on it.
Go ahead.
Turn it into eight teams. You make a six team, six major conferences, and then have two wild card from all the conferences.
All right, so six conferences and all the champions automatically qualify.
All the champions qualify, and then you get two wild cards.
Now, your two wild cards are still picked by a committee that you hate.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are because they. What's your criteria then for wild card? I'll let you think about that because it's probably going to be a complicated criteria. Yeah, that's what I thought.
I don't know. I'm sure that you can figure something out mathematically.
Okay, well,
record. How about record and record, and then a tiebreaker.
James, I got a question for you. Those teams, you know, again, we're using the example of the Nevadas, the ones that don't make it into this, you know, supposedly mega four, you know, conference. How do these teams on the outside get a chance to get into one of those conferences?
Wait. You get invited. Just like you get invited
yes.
now.
Okay, somebody has to go out. And how does that...
No,
like,
nobody has
how
to
does
go
that
out. Nobody necessarily has to go
no,
out.
No, they do because the conferences would need to be like an even. Yeah, they would need to be even.
Why?
No,
why? You could take two teams instead of one.
Nobody
would have to leave.
The SEC already
first of all,
has...
Hold on. First of all, when they add a team now, do they make a team leave?
No, they don't. Because it's not set up like that.
Is the SEC like, yeah, Mississippi State, you're kind of bad. You have to go.
No, because they're not trying to be the same size as all the other conferences.
It's not set up like that. We know.
Yeah, you guys know. Yeah, you two are a couple of geniuses.
Listen, there are teams like Vanderbilt playing in the SEC, which would be one of these power conferences. So they're just sitting there. They get grandfathered in. Is that fair? If there's Nevadas that get left out, but you still include teams like Vanderbilt, Northwestern.
You know, I'm noticing a trend here.
Iowa State.
They're in the Big Ten. They would be in one of these conferences.
Right, but
the Big Ten would merge with the Big East, and that would be a conference. You wouldn't say we're going to merge with you, and then the Big East is like, well, as long as you're not bringing Northwestern.
Right? Temple.
Temple. Yeah. Well, that's the Big East now, right?
Temple. I mean, it looks like no matter which way you cut it, five conferences, eight conferences, you know, have playoffs, 16 teams. Somebody, just because there's so many teams, is going to either bitch about
this
it or get left
this
out.
Is the,
or
same, this is
about
the same
it.
Argument for eight teams in the playoffs. If you include a large enough amount of teams, the margin for, wow, now we're getting to the teams that should never be playing. First of all, look, here's the thing. Most of the teams aren't going to be in the conversation to play for this title anyway, right? To play in, to get even get out of the conference to play in this thing.
Right.
So if you're not including a Nevada or somebody else, okay, this is all about what people want.
All right, but let me. This could be like a really quick fix right here.
Sure.
You want an 18 playoff.
Sure.
Let's say you have four power conferences.
Okay.
The four champions get the automatic bid.
Right.
The second best record, not the loser of the championship game. The second best record in each conference, they get the four wild cards. How do you feel about that?
Or you just take top two in each four and just do a bracket.
Yeah, but then there's no conference championship. That's college football still wants. You have to have a way of crowning a champion. You're not just going to quit crowning a champion. It's been done.
Well, you will. You've got one champion.
Yeah, you have
one champion.
You idiot. You're so stupid.
No, do you just have one
what
champion?
What this you, guy, okay. what, turn his mic off. Listen, this guy's just so dumb.
This isn't kindergarten
about.
Where like everybody
We're
gets
trying
a medal
to crown
for
champions.
Being participants. Yeah, you have one
That's
champion.
That's all we want. We just want to crown multiple champions.
I never said that you only had one more than one conference champion, but like, it's just like in the NFL, like you win your division and you get a home game.
You
in
get
the
a
playoffs,
little banner, I mean. All right? And you get to put it up in your stadium, and we like that.
All right. This email comes from Mitchell in Boston. James, and apparently he's identifying you as the NBA expert here because he addresses James.
Well, I am an expert on many things.
The Knicks and the newfound Brooklyn Nets seem to be going through some drama here in the offseason with their offseason dealings. I think both of them might be a mess come game time. What do you think, James?
No, I don't think either of them are going to be a mess. I think that they're both going to be playoff teams. I mean, I like what they both... First of all, the Nets had... It's come out that the Nets had to get Joe Johnson to get Darren Williams. He was on the fence between going to Dallas and New York, or Brooklyn,
and he wanted them to get another
shooter. And he said that on that final day, they called him up and they said they had just traded for Joe Johnson. We're going after Dwight Howard. And he said, I like the direction that this is going, better than the Mavs, who are getting old with no promising young players.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side to that, they're not going to get, now we know they're not going to get Dwight Howard. And they're stuck with Brook Lopez on a max deal, who Brook Lopez played like two games last year. So I don't know. That wasn't smart. But they're going to be good. They're a playoff team. They're not. They can't compete with the Heat, but they're a playoff team, and that's better than the last few years when they've been trying to get the first overall pick.
Yeah.
Now, the Knicks. I actually really like what the Knicks are doing. As you know now, the Rockets offered Jeremy Lin a 3-year, $25 million offer sheet. They're not going to match that. So he's going to be a Rocket. Most likely, they could still match it. I don't think they're going to. They did a sign-and-trade for Raymond Felton, while struggling every year with what seems to be his weight, he, believe it or not, he actually was very productive in New York as a Knick.
With what seems to be his weight.
If he can stay out of the Dairy Queen drive-thru and spend some time in the gym.
Do you realize there's a chance now that he might be hanging around Brandon Jacobs? They might hit the Dairy Queen together.
No, like Brandon Jacobs. Really, first of all, no, Brandon Jacobs got shipped to San Francisco.
That's right.
So,
I
was gonna say he's with the Niners, right?
Yeah, that's right. Tully knew that. What am I doing?
Yeah, well, his head's big enough where actually half of it can be in New York and half of it can be in San Francisco.
Wow.
Raymond, coming from Portland, right? Look, do you want privacy as a pro athlete? Play in Portland. I swear, it's just, you play in Portland and no matter how good you are, no one's going to hear about you. I mean, look, Jamal Crawford continued to play good basketball when he left the Hawks and went to Portland. Nothing.
Well, good basketball, that's all relative to what your definition of good basketball is. But he played great basketball in Portland.
You see what I'm saying? You go to Portland, man, and it's just, you've got a private life. Like, no one, like, your name doesn't come up as an autofill result on Google. I mean, it's right. Sweet. You got privacy.
Even Google forgets who you are.
Yeah.
So,
but I thought that you would appreciate this from the Knicks, that the Knicks did not match the offer that the Raptors made to Landry Fields.
Yeah.
So I thought you were going to be all about that move.
Giving underachieving undrafted players mid-level exception deals of $5 million a year for upwards of 4 years. I mean, anytime you can do that, I think you have to do it. So good job. I mean, the Raptors, I mean, they're getting a guy that averages about 10 a game. And so, I mean, he is going to really add something. He shoots a lot of bricks from downtown, so he's going to have to, you know,
spend
a little time in the gym working on that, and he's kind of a bad defender as
Rogers
well.
Rogers Sports Media up there in Toronto is not too savvy with
all right,
sport.
That was the mailbag. It was stuffed full, and we had a hard time even dragging it in here, but that was the mailbag. That was the Backseat Sports Podcast. I'm Zach Diodati, alongside James Troiano and Adam Tully. We'll see you next week. I got it.